Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm John White.
And I'm Jan Peterzelka.
And we're all here back in the studio. It's already March. Can you even believe it? We have so many things going on the calendar at this point. You can check our archive shows and see everything that we have back that's put online as far as our upcoming events. Next week, we'll be coming to you live. So make sure that you have your questions handy and ready to call in because we only got 15 minutes. And that's a whirlwind morning for us as well. But if you're out and about next week, make sure that you sign up for Sunscape, which is going to be held March 10th, the same time that we'll be live on the air. So I don't know how you're going to do that, John. But
just walk across the street.
No, yeah, that's not the magic of radio. Come on. And at the same time after that, we'll be heading
can
over.
Can I call you in? Call it in?
Yeah, because when we're done with that, then we're gonna run over to the home show
and meet up with the master gardeners out there answering all those questions to the public. So there's a lot of things going on, and I know that in a couple more weeks we'll be talking about spring break. But oh my goodness, before the time gets away from us, we talked about last week preparing your vegetable beds as far as your seeds, but we want to make sure that you have your beds all prepared. And we've talked about that as far as our organic matter and our composting. So
makes a big what's the thing that one of our master gardeners that teaches vegetables always says? He with the most compost wins.
Right.
And having that soil prepared is just, you know, it's key. And if after we talked, like we talked last week about propagating, germinating our seeds and so forth and so on, then you want to get your beds prepared ahead of time. So do add a 2 to 3 inch layer of that organic material such as compost. And that's per 100 square feet of garden area. That's a pretty good estimate.
Yeah, so you look at whatever the dimensions of our
right,
of your bed,
the garden art.
And then you want to make sure
the 2 to 3 inches in it.
There's a lot of nifty calculators online that kind of just you punch in your area and tells you
and
how many
tell you how to do
cubic
it.
Feet you need if that's your size of your garden. So
well, and one of the things that I think that is a good point to hit on today is that peat moss, you know, we read a lot about peat moss. I remember my mom using peat moss all the time. Mm-hmm. Well, and it has its place, but in our desert Southwest, it tends to wick up the water. So, you know, not the best thing to add to our garden beds because it's going to, it really does, it's going to sap the water from the ground, isn't it?
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, and then, you know, it's because a lot of times, you know, get our big bog stores order that by the truckload, and there's like these nifty
bales of it.
pallets that are stacked about 10 feet tall, it seems like it. And it seems like people want to use that. And I mean, I just don't think that it's one of those amendments that you should be looking at for our soils.
Exactly.
You know, it's really what we're looking for is organic matter, composted organic matter.
Exactly.
It's going to have a very earthy smell. That means that all of those nutrients are breaking down and they're going to be available to the plants themselves.
So a lot of magic going on down underneath.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly. So your peat moss is really going to be the base of your soilless mixtures, things that
exactly.
you buy for potted plants in your interior scapes or whatever. You know, they use peat moss as the base for that
exactly.
and they add other components to that. So not
but
choice.
Not in your outside gardens where you really are
right.
looking for those big nutrients.
Plus, if you're trying to be, I guess, a little bit on the sustainability, you know, the
old things.
Peat moss is kind of one of those controversial subjects that, you know, a lot of peat bogs are being harvested, you know, just to produce peat to be sent across the country. And it's destroying some areas where you have natural peat bogs.
Right.
And so a lot of people are anti-peat.
Well, you don't want to remove the moisture from the soil. I mean, we have enough problem here as it is. We, you know, it's that moisture is a precious commodity. So just be mindful of that is what I would suggest.
We were at a conference somewhere one time, and there was we were in a residential area, and there were some signs up, you know, landscaped by peat moss.
Oh, really?
So,
P-E-T?
Yeah, he had his, He had a landscaping guy. I don't know if that was his real name or not, but that's what he was using.
Oh, my goodness.
His mother was a horticulturist when she named him.
And remember that your beds, especially your vegetable beds, are going to need a lot more organic matter, yes, to be able to build that up. They're generally going to be more heavy feeders, heavy if feeders, you will, in regards to planting, and you're going to have a lot of turnover at the end of the season and things like that. But one thing that you can do some prepping and some beds are going to be for your flower beds or your ornamental, yes, beds as well.
Might also mention, a lot of people connotate animal manures as compost.
Yes, and be careful.
Animal manures are used in compost, but they do have to be composted down.
Mm-hmm. And very hot.
And they usually associate with some, salts that are in it. Mm-hmm. So if you're using animal manures as your source of organic matter, work it in real good, water it real, real good before you try and seed or plant into it, because it can be hot, can burn little tender roots and stuff.
And we have alkaline soil. We don't need a lot more salt added to the soil, that's for sure, because it can be the enemy.
So you want it to smell earthy and not wasteful?
And when you're tilling, you also want to be careful not to create a hard pan where you till at the same depth every year, every time. So mm-hmm. you kind of want to go deeper, break the ground up, and that way that organic matter can help loosen
the soil
work
certainly,
down in.
Certainly. Makes a difference. Well, what about ornamentals, John?
What kind of
suggestions do you have for us?
Well, it's a good time to plant things. I mean, container plants can be planted year-round. If you can still find some bare root stuff, it's a good time to plant. Bare root.
Careful with that, though, too.
Yeah, if they've been in the store, a lot of those bare root things are breaking bud right now, and that's usually not a good sign for bare root stuff. You don't want to be planting it when
it's closeout. Normally, you might be able to save some money, but you want to really be careful. Make sure that what you're buying is quality stuff.
Yeah,
I like to stick to containers this time.
So you like to buy, if you're buying bare root, you want to buy it in a dormant stage. And hopefully it's still alive. So you want to check the pack, make sure the peat mix or whatever's in there, make sure it's got some moisture, make sure the roots are,
viable,
healthy when you take them out. And they should make it, but time is growing short on that. But container stuff, there's trees and shrubs and, of course, perennials, all kinds of stuff that you can put out. The big question among horticulturists is, are we through with all of our frost?
And that's know the answer to that.
No, that's one thing I don't know.
I just know
we're prone to late spring frost here.
Absolutely.
So you always want to be on the lookout and have some kind of protection available. A cloth or a frost blanket or something that you can throw over things just in case that period.
Yeah, a few degrees. Of temperature change makes a big difference, especially with your fruit trees and those kinds of things. And, of course, a big factor is how long that temperature stays down as well. If the temperature is down for an hour, you're not going to have the risk like you're going to have when it's down for 3 days. And people say to me, it's going to freeze tonight. Well, perhaps it does, but how long is that temperature going to stay down? And that's a large factor. And depending on the microclimate you have at your home, too, and if you've got a lot of hardscape, we've got rock walls and that kind of stuff, it makes a difference. And that absorbs the heat, so that's very helpful in those situations.
Right. But it's a long month ahead of us.
And if you do happen to get hit, the UTEP plant sale is April 28th and 29th. You can buy your frostbitten plant. Replace your frostbitten plants there.
That's true.
But now there are a lot of good things, and we've talked a little bit about habitat gardening, and people can plant different plants to attract different types of habitat, whether you want a bird habitat or a butterfly habitat or you want a bee habitat. There's different things there. And my feeling is it's good to have a little bit of everything. So have it set up, birds like to have different layers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, some of your trees and your shrubs, mid-sized shrubs, your smaller shrubs, ground covers, perennials, and the butterflies and bees all can.
The hummingbirds are coming before too much longer, so that's something to think about as well. It's not too early.
And right now, penstemons.
Yes.
Penstemons are are getting ready to bloom. Some are in bloom, and there'll be some more coming along. They'll be blooming a little bit later in the year, but that's a great plant to add to your garden. Helps the hummingbirds have something to go to. The bees, of course, go to it.
Right.
But it's a great plant, and you know, well taken care of, it'll be there for several years. It's a perennial, and will continue with you. So we'll have some early bloomers that'll be shooting up flower stalks now, and they'll be blooming for the next month or 6 weeks, and then they're going to start to die down, and another one will come along, and another species. So you just have, penciliments pretty much throughout the growing season. So they're a great plant to add.
Beautiful. And I noticed that in my own garden, my Pam's Pink Honeysuckle is coming along nicely. Thank you, Denise. And my Raspberry Sage is really leafing out. All my Lantana, that just have looked horrible all winter because I leave that as a protective instead of a, a frost cloth. They have their own frost cloth with that, what was dead. So I'm starting to cut those back because I'm seeing that new growth coming out. Right. I have a big stand of Greg's Blue Mist, and that's another one that comes back year after year. The Turk's Cap, and that's another one that the hummingbirds and the butterflies and the bees just love.
Right.
And so there's all sorts of things that you can, be thinking about. We've talked in the past and on the show about planting during these cold months. So hopefully that planting that you've already done, or maybe you've sketched out what you want to have in your garden this year, and so much of it comes back. My plumbago's coming back. As I said, the Greg's Blue Mist, there's all sorts of things. The guara is popping out as well. So there's all sorts of beautiful desert plants that are just doing fantastic.
Right.
Really going to explode on us here pretty quick.
Well, no, we have one native that is pretty popular in some of the landscapes, and that's ocotillo.
Yes.
And ocotillo with that red bloom is great for hummingbirds also. So
right.
You got your native plant influence in there that's good for some are. And desert willow, a lot of people don't realize it, but hummingbirds go to desert willows.
They do.
They like desert willows. So that's a great plant to use. And there are several newer cultivars of desert willow out now. So some of the new ones coming out produce less seed, bloom more.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get a little heavier bloom and less seed production, which is
not quite
good,
as messy.
Good for a homeowner.
Right.
But great plants. So you have those choices. And, of course, we have our Nisiacanthus. Hummingbird plant is a great plant. It it needs a little more heat to really make it pop. So it's going to be a little later coming out. But it's a great plant. And
I like the Texas Mountain Laurel because that carpenter bee. Really attracted to that one, so they love it as well. So,
carpenter bees are really attracted to the desert willow too. I have those in my yard, and I find the carpenter bees all the time. The kids freak out after
they come
them,
to
the
salvias,
wonderful.
And
yeah,
I mean,
yes,
they're not interested in us.
No,
they're more interested in the blooms.
Yeah, we watch the salvia. Right, the carpenter bees on the salvia, and they fly up to the flower, and the flower is much smaller than the bee. So we know he can't get into it. So he'll sit there and chew a hole in the bottom of the flower,
and
he gets directly to the nectar.
Nice.
So he's smart.
He's got to figure it all out.
Yeah. Well, it's great how Mother Nature sprinkles these things throughout the season, too. So not everything happens at once.
Right.
Wonderful, wonderful. Now, John, before we're out of time here, you got your Plant of the Week nomination?
I would recommend penstemon. Penstemon perii right now is an early bloomer. It's a great one to use, and just any of the penstemons that you can get would be great. There's some nice red ones that are in bloom right now. But
Availability?
They're available, so they're starting to spike, so now you want to get them. But I was just by Los Palmas Medical Center over here on, I guess what it is, Rim.
Right.
I think it's still called Rim in that area.
Yeah.
And Rim in
Oregon.
Oregon. Okay. Uh-huh. And there's some beautiful penstemons in bloom right now right there.
Wonderful. And they're the plant that keeps on giving because then they go to seed and they're going to come back for you
next year.
And they're perennial, so they'll come back, but they drop seed, and you, You can collect the seed, sprinkle it in other parts of the yard, and
good to go.
Have a great collection for hummingbirds.
Right.
Come to.
And there you go. And we'll be coming back to you week after week, hopefully, as well, along with our Penstemons.
That's right.
We want to thank you all for listening to today's show, and thank Lauren Terrazas for engineering and producing today's show. I'm Denise Rodriguez.
I'm John White.
And I'm Jan Peterzelka.
And remember, a gardener's shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.